It's easy. That's what we all want to hear when it's time to work on the car. Like the AutoZone Rewards Program. Spending $20 five times earns you $20 towards the next job. Earning savings couldn't be easier. No user manual required or online tutorial needed. And you won't have to call that know-it-all uncle for advice either. Just spend $20 five times and earn a $20 reward. Sign up for free at AutoZone.com/rewards or in store. Let's get you what you need. Get in the zone,
AutoZone. Why did the chicken buy Pacer tickets?
Why?
Because he heard refs were blowing fouls.
Okay.
Yeah. So just prepare to.
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect. Yeah.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
Got my sweet jerry box with some shoes on.
That train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bounce guest?
Hitler. Just prepare to, just prepare to be awash and unbeatable in this.
All right. Clutch, you ready? Let's do this.
I'm ready.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Undebeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast and member of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. This is episode 230, coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're continuing our discussion of the future of the Pacers franchise. We've got a stat of the week and, of course, more Undegoogleables. Joining me are our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacers fans? What is up, Undebeatables? Shout out to March. We made it. We're here. It's almost time for the madness to begin. Or continue, depending on your what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm excited for the NAIA tournament. I think it's going to be a great one this year. From Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? It's Thirsty Thursday. Drink up.
From Eugene, Oregon, out west, it's our enforcer, John Harper.
What up, fellas? Just want everyone to know I'm not panicking.
Okay.
I'm not panicking.
You look a little sweaty, a little clammy.
Calm down.
Yep.
It's fine.
Okay.
What are the stages of grief? The first one is denial, right?
I've got a bunch of stages of anger. I don't know.
Yeah. My first stage is panic.
Before we get into this show, I want to let you know where you can get in touch with us if you'd like. We're on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. We're on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. There's a contact form on our website, TheUndebeatables.com, where you can send us a message. We got an email address, shoutout@TheUndebeatables.com. Jim, in last show, we ended the discussing how the Pacers should progress with Paul George and the team going into the future. I don't know that there was consensus. Jason, you seem to think Paul George is leaving no matter what. So first of all, do you think it's worth even trying to get this guy to stay, or you think it's you just want to maximize what you can get before his contract expires?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, I think up until last week, I was a stalwart Paul George defender. I really feel like he's the best talent the Pacers have ever had. He's a guy that is a borderline All-NBA guy, and those guys don't come along very often in your franchise. So innately, I'm reticent to let a guy like that walk. but it doesn't seem like he really wants to be here. And if that's the case, then that's fine. And you have to accept that fact and position your franchise to be its best self with that knowledge intact. You can't let him walk away without getting anything in return. You've invested a lot of time, energy, and money in developing this talent, and you know, to let him walk away without getting anything to refill the shelves, as it were, is just foolish as a franchise. So if you believe that that's the conclusion that he's made, is that he does not want to be here, then you have to figure out how to get the most back. And you can't get diminishing returns. You know, I think that the Kings waited too long with Boogie Cousins, and they ended up getting a poo-poo platter and Buddy Hield. So I don't want to be in that situation as a Pacers fan. You know what I mean?
And my fear is that this trade deadline was our chance to prove to Paul George that we were committed to building a winner. And we made zero moves at the deadline. At the same time, we alienated him even further, right? We could have used that as an opportunity to be like, you know what, Paul? We don't care what they throw at us. You're our guy. We're sticking with you. That doesn't seem like they really successfully did that either, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're walking away from this trade deadline saying we're farther away from signing Paul George on a personnel level, he likes being here less because he felt left out of the loop, and we've done nothing to make our team better, then we're further away than ever from getting this guy re-signed to our team. And the last show, Jason, you suggested that, you know, maybe these offers from the Celtics are going to be there for us in the offseason. I don't think there's any guarantee of that whatsoever. And I think especially with the way that, you know, the leak from Paul George's camp came out, that doesn't increase his stock for us at all. So as far as I'm concerned, we muck this up about as much as we can. Looking down at the rest of the season here, I mean, I almost feel like we have to make the Eastern Conference Finals in order to make a compelling argument for Paul George to stay at the end of next season.
And I don't really see a path to doing that.
Seems like a long, long way off right now.
You've said before, Harper, that every game we lose is a game further away from keeping Paul George. And I agree with you. I mean, he's talked about this season, about how this has been the most frustrating season of his career, how they're not having fun, how there seems to be some chemistry issues. I was not convinced. I've said from the beginning, you don't trade a star player like Paul George because you don't ever get the return value for that type of player. This guy is a, you know, potentially a once in a generation player for us as a franchise. But if you have decided, if you're sort of at the point where you think maybe he's not going to resign and that maybe you should start looking at what deals are, you've got to go ahead and pull that trigger. I think we missed this window. I think if we were,
yeah, I did too,
just enough concerned about him not coming back, we needed to trade him. Because
I don't think the offers are going to get better.
Exactly. They get worse. Our trade value for him has diminished substantially in this offseason, and even more so by the next trade deadline. Mm-hmm. If we stick with him and say, hey, you know, maybe we can re-sign him, but we end up to the point where next trade deadline we say we've got to trade him or we're not going to get anything back,
right,
we're going to get half of what we could have gotten this trade deadline.
And the only guy I want on the Lakers is D'Angelo Russell, and he's not going to be in that package.
Well, and beyond that,
because it's a point guard heavy draft. So I think that, I think that you're right. I totally agree with you that his value, especially since it's clear that he doesn't want to be here, his value is going
down. Is that clear, though? I mean, is that clear?
Yes, I think it's clear.
You think he's done? You think there's zero chance of re-signing?
It's certainly not clear that he does want to be here.
He said, I want to bring Indiana a championship as long as we're vying for championships.
Which is a lot of
wiggle room, you know, which is trying to be the good guy, but also saying, I want to take care of my own business. So he has a ton of wiggle room in there. If you can offer him a little bit more money and you can say you're being competitive, there's still a chance to keep him. I don't think it's 100% that he's gone. But I think as a franchise, if we decided that there's less than a 50% chance you've needed to make that trade already. And we've missed our window.
Well, so with that, I disagree. I think that there will be offers on the table. I think he will still demand a first-round draft pick, a lottery pick this year. I don't think that you're going to get the ransom package that potentially was on the table at the All-Star break, right, or at the trade deadline. You know, I don't think you're going to get from Boston the Brooklyn pick and Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart. You know, you're only going to get, you know, three quarters of that, which is still a pretty good haul. And if you're, you know, you have the number one overall pick this year, you have a franchise player that you can draft. I mean, I don't follow college basketball, but everybody seems to think that at least the top three guys are franchise changers.
Sure,
so if you draft one of those point guards, and then you pair that guy with Miles Turner and then whatever other fodder you have, right, in that trade, you're kickstarting the reboot of this franchise, right?
And but draft picks are always a crapshoot, right? I mean, we know who Paul George is. Totally, and a draft pick is not a guarantee to reboot your franchise.
It's definitely not, but I think the Pacers as a franchise have proven their ability to develop talent, right? I mean, we've never been in this situation where we bottomed out to get a lottery pick, but, I mean, you know, Paul George was, you know, homegrown. Miles Turner is homegrown. You know, Hibbert returned into an all-star.
Sure, sure. And Danny Vogel Granger, was there for all
you know,
of that.
The list is gone. I mean, we're not 100%, but, you know,
I mean,
I think that it's possible.
My overarching problem here is that the ideal type is not to lose Paul George. The ideal type is to resign him. It's not going to get better for us than Paul George, right? But in order to make a convincing case for us to keep him, we had to do everything different. We had to do the opposite. Like, whatever thought that Larry Bird had in his head, we need to do the opposite of that thing at the trade deadline, right? And so, if all we're going to do is alienate the hell out of this guy while not making the team better, it's better to cut and run. Not because I don't want Paul George, because we're painting ourselves into a corner.
If we had said to him and to the media, which we sort of did, which is we're not taking offers. We did say that, but then we sort of took offers. But if we'd said we're not taking offers and, you know, Paul George is our future, and then went out and got Taj Gibson, who was apparently on the, you know, trading block or somebody like that, and said, hey, we're gonna give away first round draft picks, which we said we were going to do, but we didn't do any of it. You know, like, we were saying the right things, but then didn't do any of the right things. This is bad because the worst thing that can happen is that he can walk away. That will set back our franchise 10 years if he walks away for nothing in a year and a half.
They'll trade him.
That's never going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, they'll trade him.
I'm not saying that that's never going to happen. He could still be on this line, like, maybe I'll stay, maybe I won't. Like, that's, you know,
but he doesn't have a no trade clause. I mean, we'll trade him for something. It's just the matter of.
But he's already made clear that he's not going to he's trying to get to the Lakers, right? Who wants to trade a bunch for that guy?
Well, somebody's
not going to resign with them.
But there are teams that we saw Orlando take, you know, they went and got Serge Ibaka because they wanted to re-sign him, but, you know, it didn't work out, so they got rid of him too. But there's teams that are
for nothing.
Well, no,
we could have had Serge Ibaka for Glenn Robinson and a draft pick, apparently.
But, you know, Toronto gets him now for a couple months. They're going to get him for the playoff push. Like, somebody will be in that position next season too, where they'll.
Yeah, but you're not going to get much for it. Like, I mean, that's the thing, because they're not going to be able to guarantee that they can re-sign him either, right?
Yeah. There's a big difference between having 25 games to convince a guy to re-sign a contract and a year and a half.
There's sure.
There's a huge difference as a franchise.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to be frank about it, I mean, it wasn't this one lack of a move at this deadline that is leading to Paul George wanting to be here. This is, and we've talked about this ad nauseum on the podcast, about this is a accumulation of the past 5 years of just befuddling moves and positioning of this franchise to be to be in the worst position you could be in, which is a subpar playoff team. You know,
well, okay.
If you're constantly getting the 6th, 7th, or 8th seed, that's the worst place you can be in the NBA.
Right,
you're
but last season we won,
and you're not competing for a title, and you're, you know, barely scraping by money-wise, you know?
Last season, we won 45 games. We traded George Hill for Jeff Teague, and that you could say was a downgrade, an upgrade, or a wash. But we also brought in two other pieces that Al Jefferson and Thaddeus Young. When you look at that offseason, that looks like an upgrade. So this team should be winning more than 45 games.
Player personnel-wise, but then we did a coaching search that was, I want to get rid of this guy that's won over 50% of his games every year that he's been here, is a freaking warrior for this franchise, and I'm going to give him the boot because I don't like watching his style of basketball, and I'm going to go to his lieutenant. Like, what? You know, that's a move that just wastes time.
It's still confusing.
It's befuddling. It doesn't make any sense.
And for me, I know that this trade didn't look, it wasn't the thing, but it was a chance to at least kind of get a fresh start, right? Put our best foot forward and show Paul George that we were committed to him, right? And I feel like we failed on all fronts.
At least do something. Yeah, at least trade that pick for something.
Something. Anything. And, you know, this is just such a fundamental failure of management to not only improve the team, not only fail to improve the team, but also alienate your best player in the process. I mean, that's just, it's inexcusable. And that has to fall on the feet of Larry Bird.
Even if it's like, so I was wondering this week, you know, we threw out the idea last week that maybe Paul George and Miles Turner don't get along so well, because we never hear them saying, you know, you never hear Paul George saying, oh, this is my guy, and, you know, you never hear Miles Turner saying, well, Miles Turner, I guess, had his back a couple times, but.
But you never hear him saying, like, this is my mentor, like, he's totally took me under his wing sort of thing.
Right, exactly. So I was wondering, would you guys have thrown Miles Turner in a pick into something? To get if you would have gone to the Bulls and said, we'll give you Miles Turner and our first round draft pick for Jimmy Butler, do you think that the Bulls would have, how fast before they hang up the phone on that one?
Not that long, I don't think, because they apparently got the same offer from the Celtics as we did. And they know they've got two years left with their superstar to make it right.
But I'm wondering I would have been more comfortable with that move than nothing. You know what I mean? I love Miles Turner.
No, I agree. I don't think that they pull the trigger on it. I would do that. And like I said, I think if Terrence Ross in Toronto's first round pick gets you Serge Ibaka, why does that trade not make sense for Glenn Robinson III and a draft pick?
Sure.
And that doesn't make us worse.
No, that makes us vastly better.
There were definitely things to do, you know? That we didn't do.
So when can we, are we at the point where we where Herb Simon needs to fire Larry Bird and Donnie Walsh and Kevin Pritchard?
I don't think that's happening. I mean, I think he trusts all of them too much. They've been around forever. We are a franchise that has stayed relevant despite the fact that we've gone through some terrible things, right? We tend to make the playoffs, you know, after the brawl, after Reggie Miller retiring, after our superstar breaks his leg. Like, we've been relevant. We've been a playoff team, and I think those things go a long way. I mean, there are some terribly mismanaged franchise in this league. Sacramento. And we're not that bad. And so I think there's something to be said for that. But the way this was handled has to make you wonder as an owner, right? Because the way that you handle a franchise player is going to affect the next 10 years of your franchise.
Yeah. So I'd say we're a step above embarrassing.
Yes, we are.
But
a few years ago, we were in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, it's not like our management is a disaster. They screwed up the coaching change for sure. And they've totally botched this interaction.
We can't move Monte Ellis because of his contract. We can't move Rodney Stuckey.
We don't have albatross contracts, though. None of our contracts are albatross.
I'm going to say that's a complete disaster. We made the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years in a row with an up-and-coming superstar who was not in his prime. And we have regressed from that point. That is a failure as a franchise.
Yeah.
We were toe-to-toe with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh in the Eastern Conference Finals. And we went backwards from that, even though our best player was 23 years old.
Right.
That's not good management at all.
That is not good.
I'm pretty sure I've been calling for Larry Bird's head for a year, so I'll stick with that.
Sure.
And we I don't think you're allowed to call for people's heads.
We benefited from the fact that we're in a weak conference, basically, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the only reason we've remained, quote-unquote, relevant, right?
Well, okay. It wasn't... I mean, I guess it was management's fault that Wes left because he didn't like the way that we treated Hibbert. I understand that we had to get rid of Hibbert because Hibbert was sort of... The basketball the style of changing, basketball was sure. changing, sure. But we did it unceremoniously, and that affected how Wes felt about the franchise, which made him leave. We had to sort of reinvent this thing on the fly, not totally for the fault of management.
Well, couldn't we have continued to play the same ball with Frank Vogel as our leader, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we would be better than 15th in pace, 15th in offense, and 15th in defense. We would pick one of those categories to be better at, I promise.
And I'm not even saying that's the solution, but I'm saying it was certainly a possibility on the table.
Right.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm really concerned about this thing moving forward. I think that this the last 25 games here, I think you're going to see a lot of blowouts. I think you're going to see... I mean, we're already looking at Paul George getting tossed from a game. You know, both games not really scoring that much. I'm not saying he wasn't active and engaged in that Memphis game, but, I mean, we're potentially to a stage where our superstar could be acting out, and this thing could blow up here at the end of the season. I'm not looking forward to how this unfolds, unfortunately.
Well, one thing that I've not been excited about is the way Paul George has been acting this, particularly this season. You know, the complaining, just constantly complaining to the refs, and that's something I feel like Indiana fans aren't going to get behind.
Not a lot of patience for that.
No, over this whole season, I mentioned several times where. You know, he's fouling somebody so he can go over there to the referee and complain about the foul. You know, I think as a very young player, you know, he'd gone to the Eastern Conference Finals twice. So, you know, he's probably the best player on those teams. So, you know, he's a superstar, but, you know, he doesn't get to do that. And he's been doing that. And referees aren't going to talk to him the way they may to, you know, somebody like James or Curry or some of the other big name players, but like he's just being disrespectful, and it's causing the team to suffer. And while of course he's been throwing up, you know, his numbers this year are as good as they've been. Like they've been great numbers. You know, it's harder to get behind for me to get behind a guy who's behaving in that way. And the last great players we had. Reggie and Jermaine O'Neal, like in Granger too. Like I never felt the same way about those guys. Where they were prima donnas, and
Reggie got it in with the refs.
He did. I agree that certainly happened, but I felt like he picked his shots. You know, it wasn't the same.
I agree, it wasn't the same. And like I don't know what Paul George says to the refs. Like I don't have an opinion on that, but I do have an opinion about. The way to approach basketball, right? And you can't go towards the rim trying to get fouled, right? You got to go to the rim to finish, right? And if you get the foul call, great. If not, then you got to find a way to put the ball in the hole or find an open shooter, right? You worry about the rest later.
Yeah, my mom said the exact same thing today. She's just like she's just trying to get fouled in the lane. Like he's not trying to score.
And I tend to agree, right? Like you can't. It's counterproductive to worry about whether or not those whistles come. It's you got to worry about the stuff you can worry about. On the basketball court, right? And it's beyond your control. And whether or not you talk to the press or your teammates or the refs about it, or it's still going to be the same. So you got to go and control what you can control.
So this is, Colson, earlier, maybe it was in this episode or offline we were talking, and you compared sort of this catastrophe to, you know, the brawl, basically. in terms of franchise altering, right? And so after the Brawl, we basically had a 5-year drought from the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Are we heading towards something like that, like a complete rebuild situation here?
Well, I mean, that's my concern. I mean, I feel like there's plenty of talent on this roster on very reasonable contracts moving into a whole new CBA. And a lot of these guys are locked up for 2, 3, 4 years. And these are professional basketball players. So we have pieces to keep us competitive. But without a Paul George and without getting, you know, close to some sort of equal value, even 75 cents on a dollar, you're pushing your franchise back considerably.
I mean, if you look around the league over the last 20 years at teams who lost a first-flight player, we'll put OKC off to the side for a second because small sample set, and they also had a superstar.
Weird circumstances.
But outside of that, I mean, if you look at the, you know, the Dwight Howards and, you know, other guys who just up
Kevin
left,
Garnett.
Kevin Garnett.
You know, Minnesota was terrible. They're still terrible. Denver
got to have long-term consequences for franchises.
The Carmelo Anthony leaving Denver, they got a big haul back and were sort of competitive, but they've been mediocre to bad for 10 years since
then.
Yeah,
but is New York.
Well, yeah. No, but I mean, you know, Chris Paul leaving New Orleans, like that, you know, they didn't get better.
Well, like, yeah, the shining example that people keep throwing out are the Utah Jazz, and they say the Utah Jazz dealt Deron Williams at the right time. You know, he was not getting along with management, and they got a pretty good haul back. And then
sure, and they did it early.
Them 6 years to get back to
right
playoffs.
Correct.
I mean, granted, yep, they're in a harder conference, but yeah.
If we thought we had to trade him, we should have traded him. And I you
or
can't
done something else, or at least like
or get him some help.
Yeah. It just felt like institutional paralysis. That's all it felt like.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right, and I think that
we freaked out. We freaked out, and we did
that
both
was Paul
things
George's
wrong.
Fault, right? Like I said on Monday show, like. I think that he gave them a wishy-washy response when they asked, you know, how do you feel about us? He said, no, baby, I like you, you know, but I just don't love you.
Well, okay,
and then the Pacers would be like, well, I got to look around then, man. Like,
well, no, but if that's it is institutional paralysis, because if you get a wishy-washy answer, you say, all right, boom, you're traded. You know, I got to know because I've got to keep this thing moving forward. I mean, I understand why it was hard for them to make that call, because, like I said, you never want to trade away the superstar, but be decisive. We weren't decisive either way.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think we're going to be floundering as a franchise for a while.
Yeah, I feel like...
You know, I don't know if Jeff Teague's going to want to re-sign on this, you know,
well, you
keeping
wouldn't,
pile.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the decision you have to make is, like... rebuild. You have a great young talent in Miles Turner who's 20 years old. So you go maybe not full-blown Sixers mode, but you get a bunch of young guys and let them build together and bring in a coaching staff that's good at developing young talent and, you know, bottom out for a couple years. And then hopefully one of those young guys becomes an all-star. And then you got a piece to start, you know, attracting free agents or, you know, getting veteran guys in.
So you're saying off season you try to trade him for a top 3 pick, you don't re-sign Teague, you bottom out?
Well, I think that it's, yeah, I would try to get a top 3 pick, and I would draft one of those point guards that apparently there's like 3 or 4 great point guards.
9 of the top 10 guys in the projected draft are guards.
Right, exactly. And so I would get one of those point guards and then not re-sign Teague and then, yeah, go from there.
And Leary is good at drafting. Ugh.
I mean, unless he's drafting big, goofy white dudes like Hansborough or Miles Plumlee. Besides that, yes, he's very good at it.
I think it's time. We want to hear from a sponsor now.
Really?
I do.
Are we ready for that?
I think so. It's a good time. Go ahead.
I mean, does anybody have an answer besides let's trade PG at the deadline? Like, not at the deadline, but in the off season. Like, is that where we're at now as a fan base? Like, I don't want to do that. Like, can we at least start trying to talk Paul George into staying?
Well,
like, come on,
yeah,
man.
No, I mean,
you love it here. You love it here, buddy. We're great. We're gonna.
Well, what's your plan to do that? Your plan is to re-sign Jeff Teague for $20 million a year.
stopped short of that. Right now, all we've got is the rest of the season, right? So we've got to start doing things to help us get better. I'm ready to have Nate gone. Let's bring in Mark Jackson. I don't care if he and Larry don't get along. We need a coach who can coach and bring a team in the locker room together. Let's go out and get us a Terrence Jones or,
you can sign some, what are these?
Jared Solinger. Somebody.
Guys.
Do something.
That get cut, sure. Okay, so try to get better this year. Try to make a run in the playoffs.
You have to.
PG is a fantastic big game player. See if he can start feeling warm and fuzzy about us.
Ugh, this is going to be brutal.
You don't like the Terrence Jones, Mark Jackson rebuild? Not a believer?
I'm not sold by Jared Solinger.
Let's okay, fair enough. How about, can I get you some Marcus Thornton?
No.
And Jason, you mentioned to yourself, like, at the deadline, you know, maybe we could have packaged a Miles Turner for something. You know, maybe there's still something to do in the offseason.
But we weren't taking that call. We were too busy taking the Paul George calls.
Sure. Right. Agreed.
You've got call waiting now. I think you can do both.
Ideally, he has more than one person answering the phone. Ideally.
Well, we have three GMs. Can't you just sign a pass to each one of them?
They only have
Pritchard,
one.
You work on
phone
this
line.
Type of deal. Donnie, you work on this type of deal. I'm going to sit over here and drink some Buds and swat away calls about Paul George. You know?
Like, that would have been perfect. That would have been great. Why aren't you running this franchise, Jason? That'd have been
I
great.
Ask myself that every day.
Yeah, just a billion and a half short on dollars.
Okay, now you can do
Thank
that.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank
just,
you for your...
I just wasn't emotionally ready to go to the advertisement yet.
Well, I was going to do that, and then we could talk about it more. But but it's great. I think that our sponsor this week is Audible.com. You know, we've been fans. I've been using Audible for many, many years. Audiobooks are fantastic. And for listeners of the show, Audible is offering a free audiobook with a free 30-day trial. To give you the opportunity to check out their service. It's great. You get the app, and they've got tens of thousands of books that you can listen to. Ones right now, I'm reading Never Split the Difference, Negotiate as If Your Life Depended on It. It's written by Chris Voss, who's a hostage negotiator. But it talks about how you can apply that to your life, which I think is very cool.
Can he talk to Larry Bird and Paul George?
Well, Bird that book?
I'm going to sign up for a free trial. I'll send it over to Mr. Bird. Maybe it would be helpful in this situation.
Oh, man.
Or maybe we could hire the author as a negotiation consultant.
Yeah, I was going to say, in Larry Bird's case, everyone died.
Harper, you said you're reading The General and the Genius right now.
Yes, sir. Manhattan Project, Oppenheimer and General Groves.
Sweet.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so you could listen to that while you're doing pretty much anything. So check it out.
Kyle listens to while she runs.
Oh, yeah?
She's currently listening to Girl on the Train.
Okay.
Through Audible.com.
Okay. Very nice. Well, if you go to audibletrial.com/almighty, you can get the offer. Again, that's audibletrial.com/almighty. So you get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial. So what I think the most effective route would be to keep PG. You know, even though I've not been a fan of some of his antics. If we can keep this guy around and keep him happy, you know, we can pay him more money than anybody else, which I think is kind of a wash because, you know, if he's in LA, you know, he's going to get some bigger deals, outside of basketball, but,
higher taxes out there in LA though.
Good point.
Shout out Charlie.
I mean, it does make a difference when you're making millions.
It makes a difference to anybody.
Yeah.
But
what do you think it takes to keep him? That becomes the question, right? What
well,
do we
okay,
have to
for
do?
Me, Well, I mentioned this in the last pod, that if Larry Bird had feelings or emotions, he would go down and be like, hey, look, we love you. We want you to be the future of this franchise. And I'm going to do whatever I think in my power to make this better and give him a big old hug. I know. But that would be step one for me. Let's just, try to smooth this over and make him feel confident that we want him here and need him here. And then, yeah, I think you've got to make dramatic moves that say, we need you here. And I think that's, hey, do you like the coaching staff? Do you like the players on your team? You don't maybe listen to everything he says, but take it into consideration. I mean, I think Larry Bird's of the mind that it doesn't matter what the players think because they're not in charge. But the best NBA franchises right now are listening to their players.
Yeah, well, none of that stuff's going to happen. So we've already rebuilt our team, right? We already did that once. I mean, to me, unless we make the Eastern Conference Finals, I mean, I think that we're all but dead in the water this year. I would have to win 60 next year for this to make sense for him.
Totally.
I don't see a path to it either. There will be money to pick up a free agent.
But who the hell wants to come to Indiana? A place where, the president of basketball operations won't listen to the best player on the existing team.
And, hires, and will there be money? I mean, because, step one would be re-sign Jeff Teague, right?
Yep, exactly.
And then once you do that, there's no more.
You're kind of out of money, right?
Yeah. Because there's not big money. There's not a way to sign a high end player at that point. You could definitely. There'll still be enough money to sign a mid level player, maybe. But that's not what this team needs.
Mid level exceptions is like $9 million or something. It's not
right. I mean, you could, but I mean that could get you something, a serviceable rotation player. But that's not necessarily what this team needs.
Yeah, that's not going to get us from where we are to 60 wins.
So you hope internal development from Glenn Robinson III and Miles Turner?
Okay.
I think Miles Turner is going to be, even better. He was good last season. This year he's been fantastic. There was no sophomore slump for him. And I think next year...
Well, that's the silver lining, right? It's you have a cornerstone player to build around at a minimum, right?
I think you go get Taj Gibson or Serge Ibaka that we whiffed on at the trade deadline. They'll both be free agents at the end of the year. To start.
That's just admitting your mistakes and like grasping at straws, it sounds like to me.
I feel like Taj Gibson's not a great fit. I mean, Thaddeus Young plays great for us.
Yeah, but we're not tough enough in the paint. We don't mix it up enough. We don't get enough rebounds. We get pushed around.
Okay, so we're going to take away Thaddeus Young's three-point shot and we're going to replace it with Taj Gibson's hard-nosedness. Have we really
the way that we better? Run this team? The way that we run this team, we're playing small ball at a slow pace, so we're just getting outboarded and bullied.
I don't agree with that. We have no sense of identity whatsoever, right?
Yeah,
and it would be great to be able to solve that problem, but we're further away from that than anything else. It seems like, right? We don't know what we want to do. I mean, the very fact that we were going after Jahlil Okafor, right, is testament to the fact that we have no idea what we're trying to do. We have no plan.
There's no plan whatsoever.
No.
There's no plan. The thing to do would have been the more and more that I think about it, the thing to do would have been to trade PG for the Brooklyn pick and other assets, bottom out this year, and get two lottery picks.
I don't think you bottom out if you trade with Boston. Like they're going to give you two decent pieces. We're in the East. We get a top three pick, I mean, and we still get playoff.
Jay Crowder, we're still pretty competitive.
Yeah, you still get playoff experience plus a top three pick, and going into the next year with great contracts and young guys.
And Lonzo Ball.
I hate the idea of trading Paul George. I want him to be here for his entire career. But if we were not sure and we have alienated him to the point where we have to trade him, we should have already done it.
Let's take a break, gentlemen.
Bottoms up.
You're all fired up. What are you drinking there? Clear. Is that vodka?
Boxed wine.
Oh, it's a white wine.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Okay.
Slugging some boxed wine.
Okay.
Little black box Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, I like the black box.
Yeah.
I usually get the Merlot or the Cabernet.
You know, the red gives me the hangover.
Mm. That's probably just the alcohol. Yeah. But.
Maybe it's the drinking too much that gives me the hangover.
Yeah. You gotta hydrate.
I feel maybe there's more water in white wine.
Maybe.
That's not how alcohol works.
You are correct, bartender. This week, we got a track from Zachary Leon called Midnight Boogie. JT's been jamming out to this one. It's a good track.
It's hot. Hot track.
Check it out.
Hello.
We'll be back in just a minute.
Pull up on a nigga like, what the fuck is you looking at? Pulling out your pistol like, what the fuck you gonna do with that? Blinded and divided, that's black on black at its finest. As the field begins to wither, the flowers burn in silence. Nocturnal animals dancing in the moonlight. Nocturnal animals dancing in the moonlight. 109, 16 and 17 days. The water is rising, we drowning in our wicked ways. Mapping out a blueprint of something that's fairly lucid. It's blind to the naked eye, my best just to sanctify. Condition like we about to join Olympic team. Who's the mastermind behind our puppet strings? Chester's chicken, Tahitian tree, red tongue sipping. Something's missing, too many cases, familiar faces. We're surfing these channels, nocturnal jumping hurdles. Huddle smoking on the purple. See the moonlight dances over the nappy city. Streets are gritty, rattled with bullets, and we don't ever know who pulled it, but we know the victim. We know his cousin and his mother and his baby brother. Too busy trapped in the trap, stuck in a system that lacks equality. We stuck in poverty. I dare you follow me.
We're back for the break. Check out Zachary Leon and Midnight Boogie. The link in the show notes is in SoundCloud. You can listen to it for free. Next up, we got my stat of the week.
Joey's stat of the week.
And again, it's going to be Mr. Russell Westbrook. This season has just had just an amazing, amazing stat line pretty much every night. He just recorded his 28th triple-double of the season and ended up the night with 17 points, 18 rebounds, and 17 assists. It's there's only been two other players to do that since 1985.
What a jerk.
Magic Johnson and Rajon Rondo, another one to do that.
Oh, I forgot about that Rondo game.
But 17, 18, and 17 is just crazy town. Getting those many rebounds or assists from any player is tremendous. You see 20 rebound games just a couple times a year, maybe. But that many assists is just tremendous, and he's putting together in a single night.
Has he like locked in averaging a triple double for the season?
No, he's like 10.1 assists, so that's the one that's going to be kind of. He's got the other two locked down, I think, for the season. But well, he's averaging like over 30 points a game, so that's locked in.
Yeah, that's pretty well locked in.
But yeah, the assists is the one that might falter on him down the stretch.
Well, he can score a little bit less to help it out. Dish the ball a couple times.
Yeah, just a couple more 17, 18, 17 games, you know. Yeah.
Teammates just have to hit the shots.
Man, OKC is so happy they don't have Kevin Durant right now.
Yeah, right.
This is just holding Westbrook back.
I'm telling
28
you.
28 triple doubles on the season.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So does he get it done? Does he average the triple double for the season?
I think he's going to.
Taking votes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on his to-do list.
And yeah. I know
he'll make it happen, even if he has to just be the facilitator for the last 20 games, sort of thing. He'll make this happen.
Yeah.
Will that win him the MVP?
Good question.
I think part of that depends on how the team turns out, like standings wise. Like, they're good. But it's
so Houston's going to have a better record, and the beard has you know, crazy points, crazy assists, way more assists, and is averaging like almost 9 rebounds a game. Like, he's near a triple double himself.
Yeah,
right.
So probably you go for the record, and James Harden wins it, which would be crazy over a guy who averages a triple double. That'd be just insane.
I mean, I think that Russell Westbrook has the inside track on it, just because he plays two ways in the NBA. But there's certainly no guarantee of that. I mean, Harden's had a phenomenal season.
Yeah, exceptional. These two guys are just playing a different game.
I bet they split it. I bet it's like co. Or super close vote-wise.
Yeah, that'd be cool. It'll be close.
Has that ever happened before in the NBA? I know it's happened in the NFL.
Right, yeah. I don't know.
Well, it's weird with the 3-vote tally thing, and first place votes are worth 5 or whatever. Like, it would be against the odds.
For mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. For sure. That sounds like an undergoogable, though, Colson.
I don't think it's ever happened. That's what I'm going to go with. Go ahead, Joey.
Oh, okay. I thought he was setting you up.
He was setting me up, but then I was like, I just love
put the ball right on the turf, buddy.
Nobody wants.
I just
to
love the sound of Joey's
Fumble
voice.
Fumble Rooski.
I want more Joey.
So he lobbed you a softball, and now I got to pick it up and put it on the tee.
Yes.
Well, it does sound like an undergoogable question. Colson, again, this week, we got more. We got some topical things. You're going to ask some questions, and we will know partial answers, I'm sure. What do you got for us this week?
You guys do great every week. I don't know what you're talking about, Joey. Basically, people don't need to Google stuff anymore. They just need to listen to our show.
Then they would know like one thing a week.
That's so great. You're at work and you're like, I wonder what the answer to this is. No, I'm just going to wait until the next Undebeatables episode. Maybe
wait until Thursday.
Maybe they'll cover my specific request.
Oh, are we doing Undebeatables?
That was the plan.
Super excited.
You told us we had to, sir.
He said we signed up for it.
In the end, it's going to be better and more true than Google can give you.
So as we're recording right now during the Oscars, the Academy Awards is happening as we speak. And so that made me inspired to think about the previous award-winning movies. And I thought about it, and I can't really name any movie recently because I just stopped watching movies, I guess. But I have some sense of maybe who won movies in the 90s. And I'm wondering if between the four of us, we can gather the winners of Best Picture from 1990 to 2000.
I was 11 in 1990.
Okay,
but I cared about movies then. I feel like I've got.
Well,
this.
We've actually. I'll help to show you my perspective. We've actually done several podcasts because I don't watch movies.
That's true. That's true.
And Jason, actually, I remember one time at your house. I think your sister hosted like a board game night, and we played a movie trivia night or a movie trivia game, and I basically sat off to the side and stared out the window.
Said I'm too smart for this.
It was the opposite of that, which is I don't know any of these things. So let's do this.
Now, okay, Joey, but for example, didn't you watch La La Land? That's currently up for Best Picture.
That was I did not know that it was up for Best Picture.
Okay, and then Jason watched Moonlight. Those are the two favorites to win. So you guys potentially have seen the two the movies that one of them will walk away with the award this evening.
Now, so, if I can only remember 1999.
Yeah, that makes us qualified for the 90s. Okay, I got one. Life is Beautiful, that Italian movie.
Ooh, I would not have thought of that one at all. There you
Roberto
go.
Roberto Benigni.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to say...
What year would that have been?
98, 99, something like that. We were in college, for sure.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let me list the ones that I know won Best Picture. I don't know the order, but I just remember these won Best Picture. Okay. Forrest Gump.
Sure.
Schindler's List.
Sure.
Braveheart.
Okay.
That was the only one that I knew. Thanks for stealing my thunder,
Chris. Yeah, Schindler's List was the one I had, too. Was Jurassic Park, right?
Crash.
Jurassic Park 2.
Crash? What is that?
Crash would have been in the 2000s.
Okay.
Mid-2000s. What about Philadelphia?
I don't think that won Best Picture. I think it was nominated.
I think it got overlooked.
Yeah, I think it was. Okay. I think Tom Hanks won Best Actor for that.
Okay.
Which is a travesty, by the way, because there was I don't know what year that was, but there wasn't a better movie.
Okay. A Beautiful Mind, was that in?
I'm going to say that was early 2000s.
Seems newer.
Okay. Gladiator.
That movie was awful. I no.
But it won Best Picture. It no, definitely it did. Didn't. It definitely it did. Yeah.
No, that movie was terrible.
No, and what's the one with Kevin Spacey, American Beauty?
Oh, American Beauty, sure.
That one when we were in college.
Okay, sure.
That would have been right around 2000. That could have been 2000.
Yeah. Yeah, that could have been 2000 or 99.
I think that was like 98.
Okay.
99.
So early 90s. We're struggling on early 90s because we clearly were not movie aficionados. I know that Goodfellas came out around 92, but I know that it did not win Best Picture.
Definitely did not.
But I don't know what did. Like, was it like Grand Canyon or something? Or
I don't even know what that is.
Unforgiven.
Really?
Unforgiven. Do you remember that one? Unforgiven
that
one.
Picture?
Yeah, without a doubt it did.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. So we got Unforgiven, Schindler's List, Forrest Gump, Braveheart. You're saying Crash is too late.
Crash is too late. Yeah.
Ooh, I'm saying Gladiator, American Beauty. So that's six. No, okay, I've got another one. This is Harper's favorite movie of all time. You love this movie, but you hated the book. Because it's the only movie where the movie was better than the book.
Land Tumbling Backwards.
Oh, The English Patient.
English Patient. That definitely
English
won.
English Patient. Okay, yeah, there you go.
I also like the answer, Land Tumbling Backwards. That's good. Thank
you. That movie was real budget.
Okay, so that's seven.
Dante's Peak.
That's a classic. Two. But I don't think that won anything.
I saw it.
Let's see. Okay, we can do this. When was Beauty and the Beast was the animated movie that went up for... It didn't win, but it was nominated for Best Picture. Do you remember what beat it?
I do. I'm Googling it now. Oh, we're missing a big one that you guys could definitely get.
Titanic?
No, World War
Titanic. Well done.
Still never.
I was going to go with Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
No.
Oh, 2000.
That got overlooked.
It got beat. Yeah, it got beat. It was nominated, but it got beat. Life is Beautiful also got beat the same year.
It did not win. By what?
So,
all right. Do you want to know them?
So let's do.
I want to know what beat those two movies.
I'm going to run them down. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
Okay.
1990, Dances with Wolves.
Dances with Wolves.
91, Silence of the Lambs.
Ooh, that one, Best Picture.
We should have had that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good movie.
That's a great movie.
And JFK. 92, Unforgiven.
Yes.
That's 93, Schindler's List.
Okay.
94, Forrest Gump.
Okay.
95, Braveheart.
Yeah.
96, The English Patient.
We're killing it right now.
97, Titanic.
Yeah.
98, Shakespeare in Love. That's the movie that beat Life is Beautiful and Saving Private Ryan.
That's garbage. Really? Although I've never seen it. But it's still garbage.
Gwyneth Paltrow gets naked, so it's sort of worth it.
I'm watching that.
99, American Beauty.
Yeah.
And 2000, Gladiator. It beat out Chocolat, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and Brockovich, and Traffic.
Are you kidding me? It beat out Traffic and Crouching Tiger?
Yes.
This is the most excited I've seen you all day.
Beautiful Mind was 2001. So very
okay, so we're close.
I saw Chocolat and Crouching Tiger.
Chocolat was okay. Crouching Tiger is awesome.
That wasn't like best picture of the year. It was just a nice little story.
What, Chocolat?
Yeah.
Well, in a year where Gladiator won, apparently it's high cinema.
Yeah.
So I guess my issue. So all of those things we were a little too young maybe to remember Dances with Wolves and.
I remember going to see that in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I remember seeing E.T. in the theater. What year was that? Like 83? That was early.
84, 85.
Yeah. I think that's my first cinema memory.
82.
I think the one did forget is the one we should have forgotten, which is Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah.
Otherwise, not bad, guys. So shout out to the Oscars for getting it right, 9 out of 10 years.
So are the Academy Awards the Oscars? Is that the same thing?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Is that the Oscars?
The Academy is the people who give the awards. The Oscars, the statue.
Okay. So that's it's like the NBA and the Jim O'Brien trophy, right?
That's exactly
right. Precisely. Well, that analogy was spot on.
Okay.
So the Academy Award is voted on by your peers, where the Golden Globes is voted on by the media.
Okay.
Well, at the end of the year, Joey, you'll remember the NBA gives out the gyms.
the gyms, yeah, remember that. Okay, that'll be easy. I'm sure I'll remember from here on out. The Jimmies.
The old Jimbos.
I hope I can win a Jimmy someday.
We actually probably need to change our Undebeat Awards officially to the Jim O'Brien Awards.
Isn't Jim? Yes, done and done, sir. All right, let's talk about the game of the week real quick.
Game of the week.
This week, special game, Pacers at Hawks. It's a 1 p.m. start on Sunday, March 3rd. Notable because at least three of your undebeatables should be in the crowd watching this game live. Phillips Arena, the Highlight Factory. The Hawks currently are 32-26. They are fifth in the Eastern Conference, so just ahead of the Pacers. They are not very good at a lot of things. They're really good at defense. They're fifth in defensive rating. And they play decently well at home. Joey, this will be the second time I've seen the Hawks live, and you as well. The previous meeting, the Hawks dismantled the Pacers. Dwight Howard had his way with our short and meager front line, grabbed a bunch of rebounds and scored a bunch of points. So that's going to be a key thing to watch for in this game. What else are you guys looking for?
I just dislike this team. I just booed loudly for Schroeder and Howard for me. Just do that and we'll be okay.
You said they're decent at home, but they're actually a pretty good road team. I think they're vulnerable at home.
Mm. Okay.
What are they? 16-12 at home? Like that's not dominance. So let's just go in and beat them up. They don't have the home crowd. We'll be louder than their home crowd, the three of us. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're going to root the Pacers on to a win.
I don't know that we can beat up a team with Millsap and Howard on it, though.
Fair enough.
Well, shout out to the Cavs for taking away Kyle Korver. We don't have to deal with him.
Yeah, that's right. True. Because he lights us
up. I'll tell you what he would do to us, and it would be, you know, 6 of 8 for 3.
At least.
Yeah.
If not 9 of 10.
We do struggle with big guys, especially when they have two of them. So, going to have to team rebound.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm intrigued by the Thaddeus Young, Paul Millsap matchup, though. That should be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think Miles Turner is actually getting better at holding his own against the bigger guys.
I mean, he got worked by Marc Gasol, but.
Well, that guy
so does most of the league.
All-star. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that the Golden State Warriors have clinched a playoff spot?
It's February.
Wow.
It's February.
Wow.
I didn't realize that. That is messed up.
So, yeah, this is a two-man game. The rest of us just watch, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's all Golden State and Cleveland. Cleveland's picking up all the free agents. And
the rest of the league is just cheering for sprained ankles at this point.
Yeah.
The Pacers haven't even clinched Paul George yet, you know?
Come on, PG. We love you, man. Come back. We love you.
All right. Let's get out of here. General, we got to get ready for our trip. It's going to be a good time. Until next time, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. We're on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Our website is TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form there. You can send us all a message. You can view us on iTunes. Thanks to everyone who's done that. It really helps new listeners find our show. We got some Smedium t-shirts for sale. We actually have another style up. We'll put this link in the show notes. We got the Almighty Baller style up. In all sizes.
Good call.
Oh, yeah. Computer cases. We got those.
And like tote bags, I think.
Yeah.
Is that it's the NPR's territory. I don't want to step on their turf.
Definitely want to screw with NPR. No. They're tough. Mm-mm. For once and always coach, Bobby Sick-Leonard. Turn out the lights. The party's over.
That concerned me. That sounded like legitimately sad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm not good, Harper. I'm not in a good place.
Things are not going well at Colson's World.
Your mention of NPR has me thinking that escalated quickly. We went from everything's fine, PG wants to turn this team around, to we're going to rebuild and not do it well and be a bad franchise for 5 years.
I did watch that movie with Catherine on our trip. They had
which one? Armageddon?
Anchorman.
Anchorman.
They had a DVD collection and at the B&B, so we watched. She had never seen it, so we watched that.
Movie is
hilarious. I hadn't seen it in many years, but I laughed, particularly that fight scene.
You ate a whole wheel of cheese and pooped in the fridge? I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
He threw a trident at a man.
You should probably lay low for a while.
And I tell you what, when Jack Black kicks the dog off the bridge, like, I just, my sides hurt.
A man punted Baxter.
I'm in a glass cage of emotion.
How did that not win Best Picture?
Napa know how. Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolor paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how! Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.